Hi, and welcome to episode 88 of Fresh Out of Tokens podcast. Back after a couple week hiatus for a bit of travel to Game Developer Conference and to PAX East. But this is Tanya back behind the mic and happy to do so with two amazing people who had me on their podcast, Fansplaining. And we had a wonderful, wonderful conversation about fandom, which was a lot of fun for me because I don't get to talk about it often in the sense that they do on their show. So I'm very, very happy and excited to welcome Flourish and Elizabeth to the show. Hi.
Hi.
Hooray.
Yay, we get to talk about fun stuff.
Again.
Yes. But it's fun because now I get to host you and it's awesome.
That's right. I'm excited.
It's like a dinner party. You have people over and then they have you over.
Yeah, Flourish, yeah. When are you going to have me over? I just had you over.
That's true. I owe you one.
And one day, if I ever get to meet you in person, we can all have an actual dinner party.
You are definitely invited over for a proper dinner party.
Yay. That'll be fun. But before we get into the conversation, for those that are listening, whether it's your first or 80th time, we have teas and other items in the I Need Diverse Games Spreadshirt shop, where we split the profits 50-50 with our friend Chachi Bobings, who designed our logo and banner. We have a blog to complement the show, so follow us over at outoftokenscast.com. If you have questions, compliments, episode, or guest feedback, feel free to drop a note at freshouttokens@gmail.com, especially if you want to be a guest in a future episode. And then keep up with guest announcements and show news over at Out of Tokens Cast on Twitter. So with all of that out of the way, one of you pick who goes first. But, you know, I know who you are because we had a wonderful conversation on episode 42 of Fansplaining. But for those that may not know both of your work, who are you and what do you both do?
Oh, Flourish, do you want to go first?
I was just about to say not it, but
I can do it since I don't actually care who goes first. Alphabetical, I'll go first. I'm Elizabeth. So I have a lot of different jobs, but when it comes to fandom, I probably am best known as a fandom or fan culture journalist. I've written for a bunch of different places. If you have read my writing, it's probably at the New Statesman, which is a British magazine. I wrote pretty semi-regularly. I wrote pretty regularly about fandom there for a few years. It's kind of petered out a bit. And are we just talking professional or also like our fandom selves?
Your fandom self as well.
Okay. So I've been in various fandoms. I'm not a gamer at all, I should say off the bat. I'm the only person in this conversation who has little to no connection to games. But I've been in various fandoms, mostly media fandom, television and books, for almost two decades now, just kind of ridiculous to think about. So I basically took my fanish love and all the expertise I got along the way of just reading a lot of fan fiction and started writing about that professionally about 5 years ago. And, I'm one half of this podcast, Fansplaining, and I also run a weekly fandom newsletter with another journalist, Gavia Baker-Whitelaw, that comes out on Fridays called The Rec Center.
Awesome.
Yeah, and so I'm obviously the other half of Fansplaining. I am not Gavia Baker-Whitelaw, despite the fact that everybody on the internet seems to think that Fansplaining is the same thing as the Rec Center. They're not. I
mean, also,
Elizabeth is the same thing.
Also, Gav has a podcast, a pop culture podcast with someone else entirely. And so people have credited that other person for our newsletter. And I'm like, we made it really confusing by having this overlap. So that's fine. That's fine. I'll take credit for their podcast, too. That's great.
Okay. But I'm Flourish Klink, and I've been in fandom about the same length of time, been fanish about the same length of time as Elizabeth, but I've been very publicly fanish, been involved in a lot of stuff. Back in the mid-2000s, I was a co-founder of a Harry Potter fan fiction archive and helped run a Harry Potter fan fiction convention series. I've been in a lot of fandoms, The X-Files, other things. I also like to play video games, but I'm not like super fanish about them. So I just like go and fall into, you know, The Witcher or Dragon Age or what have you. And, then don't usually read fanfic about it afterwards. But in my day job, which sort of came out of all of that fan engagement, I work on like major film and TV franchises, sort of trying to do the Hollywood term for it would be audience development, I guess, but what it really is explaining fandoms to people who work in Hollywood and helping them understand, like, how to deal with their fans. So it's a pretty fun job in a lot of ways, but it definitely brings me into contact with the like fan versus pro, and is that a dichotomy, and how does that work a lot. So that's me.
Oh, that's super interesting. Were you going to say something, Elizabeth, before we move on?
No, was I?
I don't know. I felt like I cut someone off, so I just want to be sure before
we move on. Oh, no, no. Don't worry. Thank you.
No worries. See, this is the only bad thing about having like a bunch of people who are all super polite, because we're all just like, gonna cut you off.
It's like, have you ever been in a meeting with only women? It's incredible. Uh-huh. It's like, guys, come on. Someone's got to say yes and not sorry when they start speaking. It's fine. Yeah. That's a stereotype. That's a bad stereotype.
No, but it's a stereotype. That's real. Someone's like, she's so pushy. I'm like,
Yeah, that's a stereotype that I have lived through, though. So, or just the in general starting off emails with, I'm sorry, but.
I feel like I've been shamed out of, you know, the whole thing last year, they were like, don't use the word just. Mm-hmm. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
And so now whenever I heard the word just, I'm like, should I just delete this? And I started like saying like, just being kind of mean, being like, I need this by this day, which seems rude, but you know, what are you going to do?
It's not rude. It's office culture. Yeah, and
just give it to me on this day. Let's not discuss it.
There you go. And I bet you got what you needed, didn't you?
No, so I have to keep hugging people.
Damn it. I was hoping that would be a very firm yes. Before we get kind of too into the weeds about gender politics and work, because if we start that, it'll be a whole different show.
That'd be a long hour. Yes. Accurate.
But I was wondering, you know, since Flourish, you are a gamer, and Elizabeth, you're not a gamer, kind of what got you on the path toward gaming and geekery?
Well, so Flourish, you should go first because you are on the path to gaming.
Okay. So, you know, geekery, like I was always sort of a, you know, I was always kind of a nerd, and I always like, you know, I mean, there's a very loud helicopter here. Sorry. Oh, I'm in Echo Park and there's a lot of them.
You know, entirely based on our recordings, Echo Park, I assume, is like some sort of like crime-ridden wasteland.
It's extraordinarily rapidly gentrifying.
Because you're always like, oh, whenever there's a helicopter or like a police siren, you're like, yeah, I'm in Echo Park. And I'm like, oh, well, God, what's going on there?
Because there's a lot more in Echo Park than there are in the East Village.
Oh, all right.
Anyway.
There's a lot near my house, but there's a hospital nearby.
Right. Okay. So I was always, you know, a nerd in terms of like liking fantasy and sci-fi and liking to read those things. And I enjoyed video games, you know, sort of generally as a kid. I think like a lot of people do, you know, I had a Game Boy and everything. I played Pokemon when it first came out. But I didn't ever really understand sort of how I could do that as an adult until I was in college and Mass Effect came out. And suddenly I had a reason to learn how to use two joysticks because there was all this story and I couldn't do it unless I learned to use two joysticks, and I'd always sort of like avoided doing it before because gender politics, you know, like, so, but then that meant that I couldn't like play many games because, you know, I was very console based, like all my friends played things on console and I just didn't have the skills to do it, and then I learned, and then I realized that games were a great thing that I could fall into. So I was doing all of this at the same time as my other forms of nerdery, I guess. But yeah, that was sort of how I got into what I would consider sort of gamey things, you know?
Well, how am I supposed to answer this question if I'm not a gamer?
Well, you're geeky and you're into fandom, so how did that start
for you? All right, I can answer that part of the question. So I think, like a lot of people in fan fiction, I was writing fan fiction before I knew it was a thing. As Flourish now knows, which I just revealed on our last episode. Actually, I think you already knew this, Flourish, that my first fan fiction, like my first serious fan fiction I was writing was Sweet Valley High when I was like 11.
I did know that. I didn't know about the silicone chip magnate who was your favorite. That was the real reveal. You know, I thought it was like the standard Sweet Valley High stuff, but you were way weirder than that.
No, yeah. So I was writing when I was like 11 and I wrote it all analog because this was like the mid 90s and it was about like a minor character's dad. He was like my main character and I like shifted the focus, which is like, you know, it's a fan fiction thing, right? you know, to like shift the spotlight onto a minor character, but it's true. It's not the normal takeaway. But when I was 14, this is in the late 90s, I got really into Buffy and I was going on fan sites because I finally had regular access to the internet, albeit very slow and a big clunky desktop in my parents' kitchen. And one night I read fan fiction and I didn't know what it was. And I thought it was like a leaked script and I got really upset because it was Giles became a vampire. And I was like, no. And I called my friend and I was like, hey, is this going to happen? She was like, no. This is someone's story. And then I was like, oh, shit. So then I realized this was a thing and I started reading it. But it wasn't really until the early 2000s when I started reading Harry Potter fan fiction that I was like deep in it. And it's funny because as a fandom journalist, I think that there's kind of an assumption that I'm like into general geek culture. But I'm not really. I think Flourish would attest to that. I just really like fan fiction, but only in a few certain fandoms. And I like fanishness, but I don't really go for like the things that are in geek culture. I don't really care about superhero stuff or I don't know. Flourish, do you think that's an accurate description of my interests?
Yeah, I think that I'm much more generally like, you know, I played role-playing games in college and like lived with my role-playing people and like, you know, all of this stuff and like own action figures and stuff. And you're very much more like specific about what you like.
I would say that I'm more obsessive. And so it's interesting because that weirdly, when you get obsessed about something that has like a fan fiction world or a fandom world, then I think people, the example I always use actually is when I sometimes tell people outside the fandom world that I'm a fan culture journalist. And I've gotten this multiple times. People will be like, I talk to publishers because I'm also a book journalist and they'll be like, oh, we have this great new vampire book coming out. And I'm like, okay. You know, like there's nothing, I'm not here. I wasn't in Buffy because it was a vampire thing. And a lot of people were, but I was, you know, that show spoke to me and I get obsessive. And sometimes my obsessions don't really line up with the broader culture. And I'm just in the fandom of one, you know?
Okay. But Elizabeth, you have to admit that like occasionally this may happen with me, but in a weird way too. Like how, do you remember when I was watching MASH and like, it was like 30 years later and I was freaking out about everything on Twitter and I had to like watch.
But this
all
is like
me
with everything over here being like, well, I'm watching Frasier for the 19th time, you know? There's very little Frasier. I just watched the greatest Frasier last night, you guys. So, oh, what a delight.
With you and Frasier.
I had a little popsicle. I had a little chocolate popsicle. Oh, it was so nice. So, yeah, okay, no, it's I just not like everyone who's into fan culture or geek culture is like, what's the next Marvel movie or what's the next, you know, like it's not, I think that's a bad stereotype though, because this is my problem when I go to things like San Diego Comic-Con and there's an assumption that just because you like some property that you're going to like everything else about that, but it might be that one just spoke to you. And I think it's a bad assumption on the part of like the people marketing this stuff, that it's not necessarily because of the subject matter that you can get that causes you to be really fanish, you know? So I think it just depends on the fan though.
Yeah, true. Although I must admit you're the first person I've heard be that excited over Frasier.
All right. Let me tell you though,
I'm going to time you.
No, two of my closest friends are also both obsessed with Frasier. And then I made these other friends and it was like four women and they were all obsessed with Frasier. And I don't know, this is just a random, I think cause it's on Netflix and sometimes people give it a try and they're like, I get really into it. It's so comforting. I mean, it's a problematic show. It's very of its time, you know, but like, I could watch it any moment of any day. The good ones.
That's totally fair. Just like I said, you're the first person I've heard be incredibly enthusiastic about the show. It's like, I like the show. I watched it, but I've never been that like, oh my God, Frasier, must have Frasier right now.
I have no time for Frasier. So,
Flourish, you're wrong. You have time for all these bad Star Trek novels. By your admission, they're bad. And yet you won't give Frasier a shot.
That's something. Like I'm right. Currently in a phase where I'm being obsessive about reading every single Star Trek novel, and that's fine. There's over 700 of them, and I am in the midst of them, and I'm going to read all of them, and that's fine. That's how I choose to live.
It is fine. It's fine. This is always going to be a gulf between us. Like, I genuinely love a bunch of sitcoms. Like, I also love, like, Murphy Brown and Roseanne, and Flourish just doesn't, not for her. It's our difference. It's our one difference.
This is fascinating. You sound like an old married couple.
This is like how every time we record our podcast, it gets, I'm so sorry. You're like, let's get on topic. And we're like, nope, to a new topic.
I mean, you know what? It would not be the first time that has happened, but this is interesting. Because like I said, first time hearing anyone wax poetic about Frasier. So.
That's right. So how many more minutes should I talk about Frasier?
Zero.
God bless you.
But here's the other thing is that, you know, Elizabeth, you've now confessed that what your first fandom was. And I was wondering, Flourish, kind of what was your first fandom? Because you talk more about your gaming origins. So I was wondering, what was kind of like the first fandom you got real deep into?
Yeah, well, I mean, I loved a lot of books and so forth a lot when I was a kid, but I never really found fandom per se until The X-Files. And that was like, it was like the perfect storm because it was the first television show that I was really, like, we didn't have a TV in my house and my mom thought that Scully was feminist, so I was allowed to go and watch The X-Files at my grandparents' once a week. And, that was also like the moment that I like got on the internet and I like learned HTML. This was in like the late 90s. And I found fanfic and I found shipping, like the original shipping, which was Mulder and Scully. And I totally lost my shit over it. I'm still completely like the X-Files is still my like deepest fandom, I think.
That's cool. I got into the X-Files, but I'm like, even though I'm deep into some fandoms, I never really got into TV fandoms. Like, I watched it, but maybe fan fiction wasn't a thing on my radar at the time I was watching it, but it was just like, huh. But then when I watched Power Rangers, and yes, I was a little old for the core demographic when the show first came out, like the re-envisioned American version. I got really into it. There's somewhere on the internet really bad Power Ranger fanfic that I wrote.
I think you got to dig this up. Put it in the show notes.
It's probably not hard to find, really. It's just like, ooh, you could tell I was a kid. Not a kid, but I was not good when I wrote this.
Okay, that's important. It's important to have your youthful, just like my silicon chip manufacturer. That's not actually on the internet. No one can find that.
Yeah. I'm so grateful that none of my X-Files stuff is on the internet because like it redefined Dyer. Oh, I mean, it might still be on the internet, but it's under like another name that I will never confess to and I haven't found it. So
well, somewhere depending on how long someone's known me, they may be able to find it. They may not, because I actually had a different pseudonym when I wrote that stuff. Find it. But you know, now that we've all kind of confessed our fandom sins, if you wish, I was wondering why start a podcast about fandom and why the name Fansplaining?
All right. Who should answer it?
That's you, Elizabeth.
All right. So our origin story is at San Diego Comic-Con in 2015. We're both on a very large panel, with a very amorphous topic, which was kind of a what is fandom sort of topic, I would say, within that realm of basically it was a lot of people on a panel who maybe didn't all belong on a panel together and we were having very different conversations. But except Flourish and I were having the same conversation. And so the way I remember it afterwards, we were at a party and Flourish came over and I had never met her before that day. And she was like, we should start a podcast. And I was like, okay. And I remember very distinctly also everyone else standing with us was like, great idea. We should do that. And I was like, this is not happening. We're not going to have like a spot. Do you remember the other people were like,
remember this? It was.
And I was like, no, like I'm not going to have a 5-person podcast.
Oh God, no.
And so then later you were like, no, I'm serious. And just the two of us. I was like, okay.
I remember you being very surprised at how dead serious I was and how much I was devoted to like, we're going to make this happen. I was super biz.
Yeah. We were walking to the very edge of the earth to go to the, like that weird stadium to watch the band from Buffy.
Oh my god.
Stadium is not the right word.
Who it turns out really loves the band from Buffy. Who knew?
It was the band that did the theme song from Buffy. They played it no less than 3 times before we were like, okay, we can go now because we don't know their other songs. No further. Yeah. And then, so the name came because I had a, was that the year prior when I started writing my column at the New Statesman? A bunch of the other columnists had like names for their columns. And so they were like, you need a name. And so that was, Fansplaining was the one I thought of because I thought it was funny. And like, it was right when mansplaining was coming into the, like the broad cultural conversation. This was years ago now. And then I floated it by some friends and some people were like, ah, I don't know, maybe that's too arrogant. And I was like, okay. And I already felt very nervous about the role that I was kind of stepping into of trying to speak for fan. I was worried people would think I was speaking for fandom and being too splainy. But I figured when it was just the two of us, then it would be fine. You know, I don't know. It seemed better a year later when I floated it as a name. So
I also have no problem with being splainy. So like, whatever. I'm cool with it. I accept that I'm splainy. So,
well, I think it's different in the context of like a single author writing a column explaining fandom to a mainstream audience.
You're right. You're right. I was trying to make a self-deprecating joke.
No. Yeah. You are splainy though. That's true. It's fine. That's your job. You're a professional splainer.
I am kind of a professional splainer.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yeah.
Intriguing.
So, but no one's ever like given us the feedback that I got from my friends when it was going to be just my name. As far as I know, no one's ever written, been like, how arrogant. You know, maybe there's like hate threads about us being like, how dare
that
they?
We don't know.
That I'm not seeking those out. So don't send those to us if they exist, please.
No, people know better. And here's the weird thing. I just thought it was like a clever play on mansplaining. Not so much. The arrogant would never have popped in my head.
I think it's just calling up mansplaining. Because I have friends who are like, one of my close friends was like, it just makes me think of mansplaining. And I was like, well, you know, it's a play on that word. And he was like, no, but that's negative. I don't want to think about that. And I was like, okay, that's fair. You know, so, I mean, I don't regret.
Also, yeah.
Not, I, in the end, I just named my column Elizabeth Minkle. So okay. Other people had done it. So they were like, just fuck it. Just name it yourself. And I was like, fine. And then it was, you know, because that's probably better for branding anyway, as opposed to being the fansplaining columnist. You know?
Yeah. Well, I think the other thing is that we've not said is that our podcast, we don't have a column. That's my also column not something I
get
do.
Out of here.
Our podcast very much, takes a strongly like non-masculine or maybe not non-masculine, but like not, you know, we're not like fanboy bros. Like that's not generally the thing that we cover, right? I'm trying to figure out the right way because I don't mean to say that like we don't have like men on the podcast or anything like that. We do. But I think that we take a very different attitude towards it than a lot of things that are like about fanboys. And so the idea of like sort of reclaiming the like mansplaining term, but we're not going to be talking about actually things that we're not going to be talking about that. You know, I like that.
Well, if anything, I don't think that we actually explain enough. Like we've tried in the past this is one thing that I worry about and we've discussed is like, I sometimes feel like because we want to have like is high level the right word? We want to have like a deep, like, you know, when we talk about fan fiction in particular, sometimes I think we skip 100 steps because we want to get right in the weeds, especially when we're talking about, you know, just patterns and themes where we talk a lot about like racism within the fanfiction space or, you know, queer ships and things like that. And I think that we need to skip a lot of steps to really get deep into the community. And so maybe that's a failing because I'm not sure then that it's very accessible if you're not already in that conversation. I don't know.
No, that makes total sense. So out of curiosity, because you just released episode 43, correct?
Mm-hmm. I love that I don't know. Literally every time we record, it goes, Flourish goes, hey, Vansplaining, welcome. And I'm like, this is episode. And then literally every time I go, what episode is it?
And then I say, it's 43, Elizabeth.
It's to be fair, I also have to remember the number. I mean, I can look last week's. I'm on 63 of my newsletter, and I'm on like 53 of the podcast that I produce professionally as one of my gigs. So I have a lot of numbers, you guys.
That's totally fine. There have been weeks where I totally have said the wrong number, or I said the right number, but the wrong number was in the show notes. It's A-okay.
Okay, all right. I feel a little better. But I cut you off. Sorry, go ahead.
That's okay. But I was wondering, of those 43 episodes, what has been each of your favorite, if you have one?
Oh, wow. I have many favorites. Maybe we can see if these line up. Okay. My earliest favorite was we did our first episode with just the two of us, where we like almost canceled the podcast in the middle of recording because we got so mad at each other.
We did get really mad at each other.
It was called Episode 8, One True Fandom. And we basically, I think that's when we both learned a lot about each other and our like experiences as fans. It's okay. I think we learned and we grew. And I actually think it's a pretty good episode because it's like kind of a complicated conversation and we actually have fairly different perspectives. And it was about like the nature of fandom. So I like that one a lot. Because we made it. We got through it.
We did. It's true. You know, actually, I think that if we're talking about like our, if we're talking about like, you know, like what were the high points in our character arcs? Like, you know, that was a good one. I really liked episode 16, which was called Larry is Real.
Are you cheating right now and looking at a list?
Yes.
Oh my God. I was like, how did you know that was episode 16?
Okay. So we interviewed this guy, Owen Perry. So I had like gone to London and randomly had like, someone was like, did you know there's a One Direction art show? And so I went and it was amazing. It was great. And I was like, holy crap, we need to talk to this guy. So we like cold called this dude who is a artist.
Cold like, call him. It's not like he was like, hello, who is it? Like you're on the podcast.
We basically did. I mean, we cold emailed him.
We
had no connection to this guy. And I literally just like asked the gallery assistant, can you give me this artist's name? So we reached out to him and he came on the podcast and it was incredible because like, I think, it was this intersection of like fine art and also like real person fanfic. And he was like, but in a good way, like usually when that happens, there's somebody's getting made fun of. And that was not what this was at all. He was super in tune. It was fabulous.
Talking to him really, it upended my expectations. I assumed he would have a certain perspective and it turned out he didn't at all. So then I felt like a jerk. So that was also learning and growing. That's basically, it's just about my journey. So that's one of your favorites. That's interesting.
Yeah, I really liked that one. I felt like it was great because we got outside of our normal sort of like set of perspectives and we both learned and grew.
Sure. Do we only get one favorite each? Because I have more favorites.
Okay, you can have one more favorite each.
Okay, I think that I would say, because it was such a like, bombastic is the wrong word, but it was like such a big episode, was the Race and Fandom episodes. Basically what happened, there was a huge conversation within Star Wars fandom, and that also spread out to like a lot of fan fiction and Tumblr fandom. I don't know if you encountered this last year about racism within the Force Awakens fandom. Mm-hmm. And we basically put out a call where we said, do any fans of color want to, especially from the Star Wars fandom, want to come and talk to us? And we got like 10 volunteers and we were like, why? I don't, let's just have everyone on. So that turned into basically 2 hour and a half long podcast of people just talking about their experiences. And I do not want to have an episode in the future with 10 guests because that was a lot, but it was great to just have so many different perspectives on a topic that I think that like fan fiction fandom needs to talk more about. I'm sure that other fandoms need to talk more about too. So I'm really glad that we did that episode.
Cool.
Yeah. I also really liked that episode. I felt like it was, I mean, it was sort of two episodes, but
it's a lot.
But I also, I'm going to pick a different one for my second favorite because of that.
Yeah, you can't have the same one. Get another one. I took it.
Yeah, I'll get another one. So I also really liked episode 34, which was the episode where we covered, we did a survey that was about like what tropes fans like. And like tropes in fanfic, right? And we've done a lot of stuff where we've collaborated with Destination Toast, who does a lot of fandom stats. And Toasty was not involved in, like, beyond, like, sort of giving notes and so forth, was not involved in making this survey. I'm just mentioning her because she's always on our podcast and it's great to do stats. But anyway, it was a good episode. I felt like actually mostly it was the whole project that I enjoyed because we ended up coming out. We had, like, more than 2,000 people respond to our survey. And, you know, it wasn't a perfect.
We had 7,000 people respond.
Did we really have that many?
What? We had 7,500 respondents. We're 2,000 people. Where did this come from?
2,000 was in my head.
We had many more people than that.
We had literally almost four times as many people as I respond. It was a big survey. Anything over 2,000 is a lot, guys. Like, mm-hmm. Anyway, it was a good episode.
Awesome.
And I mean, actually, that reminds me that to mention that Fansplaining now is not just a podcast. That was most of that was. I mean, the episode is basically just a follow up to this big, you know, survey and data collection that Flourish did, and she wrote a really long, detailed post, kind of breaking it all down. And that was on our Medium, and it's something that actually we got kind of thrown off by the election. We kind of lost our will to exist. But we kept doing the podcast, but we haven't published much, though I'm working on something right now for it. But we started this Medium collection when we launched our Patreon last summer, and we published a few pieces. And it's a space where we can do long-form articles about fandom. So I wrote one about our first one was about The Cursed Child, the Harry Potter play, and how mad I was that people were calling it bad fan fiction. Which turned into like a big thing about fan fiction, which is what I always like to do. So, for example, the kind of stuff we publish on there. So, we are a multimedia experience.
Very cool. I will make sure to include a link to the Medium site as well in the show notes. You are so welcome. Now let's you know talk about something that you know can sometimes turn into ship wars, at least on some public spaces, but I was wondering, are there fanish topics or just maybe even fandoms that you would not touch with a 10-foot pole?
Flourish, go ahead.
That's a story.
I mean, I have no interest in ever talking about anything that has to do with the author Cassandra Clare ever again, because we just don't have to talk about that or get into it or discuss it ever again. And, you know, she can go do her thing. Her fans can go do their thing. Her haters can go do their thing. And I would like to not be associated with any of it anymore. So.
All right. I don't know. I feel like I've been very pessimistic about. I'm trying to think of a fandom in particular. There are a lot of fandoms that I wouldn't go near. But it's like also. I don't know. It's kind of a chicken and egg thing because it's like, well, the source material doesn't speak to me. And all I see is people fighting on my dash. Like, am I turned off by this fandom because it seems to be a toxic space? Or, you know, like, would I put up with it? I've retreated from the last fandom I was in because it got so toxic. And that kind of circled back and made me not really enjoy the subject matter. And so it's tricky because it's like, being in a fandom is partly about being, you know, with fans. It's partly about the object of fandom, but then it's partly about the fandom itself. And so sometimes that's hard and sometimes they kind of overlap in ways that you can't really work past, even if you love people there and hate the reason you're all there or vice versa. So that's a very like sidesteppy answer. Whereas Flourish name names and I feel bad.
That's totally fine. But since we're talking about things that are, you know, fandom related and all the stuff that you do, since not both of you are gamers, I want to kind of revisit a topic that came up when I was hanging out with you all at Fansplaining, and that was video game or game related fandoms. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, do either of you think that there are certain genre of games that can have a fandom spring up kind of around it, or is it just that it's a game, therefore there will not be a fandom or fanfic or whatever. No one cares. They just want to play the game and go on.
I feel like Flourish is, I'm not really qualified to answer this.
So. Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's obvious, I mean, there's obviously plenty of games that have fanfic about them and fandoms for them of various kinds, right? I mean, like, I think there's more games that don't have a lot of fanfic for them than there are that do, but, like, I don't know. I mean, and, like, all the way, you know, you can look at, like, Pokemon all the way up through the more obvious stuff, like BioWare.
Well, you could say the same thing about, like, TV shows, right? Like, the majority of TV shows don't have a fanfiction fandom.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess that there's some games that have, like, cosplay fandoms, but not really fanfiction fandoms, you know?
Right. Which I don't know if that's true for TV shows. Can you think of any? The TV shows I'm thinking of are, like, shows on CBS. Though, actually, there's plenty of, like, NCIS fanfiction, so I don't know what shows I'm even thinking of right now.
Yeah.
Two and a Half Men.
I think that there's some I think that one of the things in games is that there's a lot more games that have, like, it seems to me that there's a lot of games that have, like, very beautiful costumes and not as much, like, story or characterization to bite into. Like, if you're looking at Side Fighters or something like that, right? Like, technically there's a story, but, like, that's not why anybody's playing that game, right? Like, but the costumes are cool, right? So maybe I want to dress up like that. So I don't know.
Huh. I mean,
you write in video game fandoms. You write fanfic for them. So this is, like, your question.
Actually. You tell us.
You're the guest. Ha ha.
Ah!
I will not be foiled by your trickery. I mean, we went into depth more on Fansplay when we talked about this, but I don't know that there's necessarily a genre that will engender a fandom specifically. I think something that is more lore-based, more narrative-driven, that may get more of a fan presence and fandom, especially if it's something like The Witcher or BioWare game, where you are given massive worlds to inhabit, and you're given the lore, you know, as each game releases, as each supplement releases. But fandom is never cared about canon in many ways. Yeah. So, you know, specific things like that, where it's like, this makes no sense to me. I'm just going to do what I want in fic and carry on with my day. So I think any game could generate a fandom, but I think more narrative things are going to push fans or pull in fans, I think, because there's such a rich sandbox to play in, if that makes sense. Mm.
Do you, here's a question, am I allowed to ask you a question?
Sure.
One thing I find that you do see definitely in, I would say particularly in movie-based fandoms, is people kind of building characters out of nothingness. The aforementioned Star Wars controversy was about General Hux and Kylo Ren being the most popular ship in Star Wars fandom. General Hux with 5 lines and, you know, his angry stare. The most famous one I would probably say is, what's his name? Clint Coulson from MCU. Right? So it's like, the vast majority of the stuff is coming from fandom, right? And there's this critique of, like, why are these, you know, these kind of blank white men, usually. I mean, it's often invoked when you're talking about misogyny and racism and fanfiction fandom. But I'm wondering if that ever happens, where suddenly, like, fandom latches on to an idea of a character that's not particularly developed and develops something. Or if that's more something that you see with minor TV and movie characters.
Yeah, or even just a minor character that someone may identify with or see, or for whatever reason that character pings for them, and they will spin out a whole backstory or everything else. So you kind of try to wonder what could have been.
Sure.
But, you know,
people want to know what General Hux is thinking when he's, you know, destroying whole planets, apparently.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I have a friend who's, like, really into Hux, and I'm like, okay. I don't get it, but it's not my jam, so.
I mean, I actually like I like the actor, so I'm like, you know, and some of the, like, a lot of it is just, like, funny memes, but then it's like, wait, he is like a space Nazi general, So not that funny, guys.
Yeah.
But, you know, what are you going to do? Your fave is really problematic.
True, but this actually dovetails very nicely into the next thing I wanted to talk about, which is criticism in fandom. You know, we're Schneier Bioware fans, so we're used to that because I'm making faces at my computer most days. Or, you know, when I try to talk about certain issues within said fandoms, and people do the but they care and things and stuff, and I'm just like, all right, I'm gonna stop talking to you right now. But, you know, there's been across a lot of fandoms, and right now the kind of hot thing being talked about as we record this is the Iron Fist.
That's what I was just going to mention that. Yes.
Yeah, the Iron Fist debacle and, you know, how it's, you know, the lead is stuck his whole leg down his throat and back out of his ass on Twitter.
Extraordinary.
And I'm just like, do you have zero people to tell you no, not even a friend, just like PR, someone to tell you shut up?
You know the theory, right? That that they're throwing him on, they're letting him hang himself so that he takes all the blame and the showrunner doesn't get any blame.
That would be legit. That would not surprise me in one bit. But it's like, you know, whenever we try to have these conversations, whenever we especially try to have a conversation centered about race or racism or the fact that certain people are being left out yet again, all the whitewashing with Ghost in the Shell coming up and Doctor Strange and everything else, you know, how do we deal with, and, you know, be it for games, be it for movies, be it for whatever, how do we deal with the fact that people can criticize a thing and still love it and we don't fall into the trap and the idea of, oh my God, you criticize said thing, so you must hate it. Because I think that's something that especially happens with games, because it's like, Jim Sterling, bless his heart, you know, did not give Zelda the same rating some people did, the new Breath of the Wild Switch game. And people were like wasting their time trying to DDoS his site and everything else because he didn't give it a perfect rating.
Yeah. I don't, you know, I mean, I don't know entirely on the, I don't know entirely on the fan side how we sort of deal with or think about this, because I think there's a lot of intra-fan stuff, but I will say that I think that on the, at least in sort of the entertainment industry, as far as TV and film goes, I think one thing that has an impact on this is like the use of things like sentiment analysis to sort of try and understand the mood of a conversation about a thing, right? Because one of the issues that comes up is, you know, when you have something where a lot of people are talking, if people are using, you know, machine learning techniques, sentiment analysis, instead of like actually reading all, you know, a good chunk of the conversation, or even if people are reading a chunk of the conversation and they're not like used to the way that fans tend to express themselves, right? They're not used to internet hyperbole, or, you know, they haven't been there. Like, I think it can be really hard to understand the nuances in that conversation, and people can really get so focused on negativity, which seems to jump out at them. And I say negativity intentionally because I think that people sometimes perceive all criticism as just negativity. Do you know what I mean? Especially if it's at a point in like the cycle of something where they can't change it. That's not to say that we should stop talking about it, but it is, it's interesting to me how, you know, like people will be like, well, we can't change it, so I can't listen to this critique because I can't change this one thing. And unfortunately, like the real like thing to do would be, you know, to be like, well, it's true, we can no longer change like the casting of Scarlett Johansson, which is now coming under a lot of fire, but we could do a different thing next time, you know, or like this could be like a thing that we don't do again.
It's hard, right? For a movie, because with a TV show, at least, I mean, in our last episode, we talked to a writer from Riverdale, which has come under a lot of fire, I think deservedly so, for the erasure of a canonical asexual character, as well as potential queer baiting between the two female leads. And like it, with that, you know, they just got renewed for another season. They're listening. That's not to say they need to do everything that the fans are asking. The fans are asking for contradictory things too. So I don't know how they're going to They're not going to please everyone. But with a movie, like, what are the people making the terrible, what's it called? Ghost in the Shell. What are they going to do? Like, I'm not going to know the next time those people make a movie, because I don't know who makes, like, I don't know who's involved, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think, however, like, people.
I mean, I suppose the industry at large could say, ooh, wow, this is bad. And this was racist. So, you know, but they don't. That's a thing. I don't know.
Well, what people answer to is, you know, money, right? So one of the conversations that's been happening in the industry around this is there's been some people who have wondered, like, will the whole blue around Ghost in the Shell sink it? Because, I mean, I say whole blue and that sounds like very dismissive. I do not feel dismissive about this, but that is the framing that people give it sometimes. And their point is it didn't sink Doctor Strange. And I have a lot of thoughts about why that is the case. I think that I think that Ghost in the Shell made some poorer decisions, perhaps, than the Doctor Strange decisions were, actually. Ultimately, it comes down to money, right? I mean, mm-hmm. that's what it is. That is all it is in features, I think.
Okay, I'm worried that this isn't actually answering the question at all, though.
I mean, well, it is part of the question, but it's also, you know, we all deal with fandom in various ways, either professionally or personally or both. And, you know, that's part of the discourse that never seems to come up. It's always a zero-sum game. It's always, you criticized, you know, in my case, you criticized Dragon Age Inquisition, therefore you hate BioWare, you hate Dragon Age, right, etc. And, there's no room for, I do love the game. However, here is a spot where it could be improved.
Yeah. Henry Jenkins has this thing. He says that fandom is about fascination and frustration. And I think that that's really true, right? I think that, I don't understand personally what the kind of fandom is that is entirely and purely uncritical, or where there's nothing that you want.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it gets so, and it's reactionary at this point too. So it's like all people, like all the fanboys defending Iron Fist. It's like, I don't know. I know a lot of critics when they saw it, and I think that a lot of them were predisposed to be unhappy with the show because of, you know, the poor decisions outside of the tech, you know, the text itself. But they said it's bad. Like, it's boring. And these boys are sitting here just like knee jerk being like, you know, fuck you, social justice warrior critics. Like, I bet it's great. It's like, have a nice time. You know, like, I don't know if you live in this space where you can't handle a critique of a thing that you think you should like, then you can just enjoy your bad media. You know, I don't know. That's not great, like, bridge building sentiment. I understand, but my main thing that I'm mad about this week around this topic is the and I wonder what Flourish's perspective is as someone on the inside of the entertainment industry, is that the line that they're pulling right now, the Iron Fist people, are, we made this for the fans and not the critics. This is one for the fans. And first of all, it sets up a really stupid false dichotomy, because I don't know a single critic who's not also a fan. Also, I mean, it has, not to bring this too much into real world politics, not that this is not real world politics, but you know what I mean, like capital P politics, but it, like, to me, it kind of echoes this sort of, like, do you know the kind of rhetoric of, like, you know, like, ordinary Americans weren't offended when Donald Trump said Mexican immigrants were rapists? It's like, well, what about all the ordinary Mexican Americans, you know, setting up this kind of idea that, like, the fans are these people who are completely untroubled by racist media or homophobic media or misogynistic media. It's infuriating to me. It's, I don't know. Flourish, go ahead. Defend the entertainment industry.
Gee. I don't have a defense, because I think that,
you're familiar with this. This is not unique to Iron Fist. The, like, not, we made it for the fans, right? Like, such a sad sack knee jerk.
Well, I think that one of the problems is that a lot of people in the entertainment industry genuinely do think that the fans are people who will accept anything that is in this category uncritically. Like, I think that is genuinely the definition of fan that some people are working from, and it's not the definition I work from, but it's even, it is the definition that some fans work from, right? So I think there's that. I mean, I think the other thing is that it's also a redefinition of it because it sort of protects you from critique. If you say this was made for fans and anybody who critiques me cannot possibly be invested in this, what is effectively a brand, right?
Right.
It's as though like, you know, imagine if this were like a cosmetics brand or something, right? Like imagine if MAC made like some lipsticks that were just genuinely bad, like gritty and awful. And they were like, well, but we made these for fans of MAC, not for you people. You know, everyone would be like,
right.
Okay, you know, I'm still not going to wear the lipstick. So, you know, and no one would think that that was a coherent statement. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's more of a what the industry defines as a fan and like how that can work out problem. And I think that it's also something about how fans define fans, right? Because like I said, there's plenty of fans who have a problem with any kind of critique. And I don't know. I mean, I don't want to hang out with them, so.
I know. So it's hard because, yeah, I feel like that element's always going to be there. And like, it's not ever a kind of fandom that I've been involved in. And I don't think Flourish, or I don't think you either, Tanya, because it's like, you know.
Yeah. I mean I'll make lots of apologies for things that I like. Of course I'll do that. I am a fan and I make apologies for things, but like, you know, if I really like it and I don't want to admit that I don't like something, but like, it's different than saying there can be no critique.
But it's like the things I'm actually in the fandoms of, like there are books that I think are exquisite and extraordinary, and I'm an enormous fan of them. But if there was a fandom for it, I'm not sure I'd want to be a part of it, because part of the pleasure for me, and I think for a lot of people in like critical media fandom, transformative fandom, people writing fan fiction or writing meta, is being like, well, here are the holes, here are the problems, you know, let's fix this, let's make this better. I think
that's even just here's the thing that I wish would happen.
And yeah, and I mean, every work of fan fiction, this sounds very highfalutin, is like a critical response. You know, even if your critical response is, I want the fluffiest, happiest, alternate version of this, it's still engaging with it in a critical way. And, you know, like, that's just the pleasure of it. I you know, if Harry Potter was a perfect text, I don't think I would have spent 10 years reading and writing fan fiction that, like, poked holes in every single corner of every single book. So that's the fun part, you know? And I also want our media to get better. And I think that anyone who thinks that you shouldn't critique something when it's offensive, just like, I don't know. I mean, I think the only thing we could try to do is convince them that that's a wrong stance. You know, if you're blindly protecting something that's racist, like, I don't know what to do. Then you're racist, you know, you by association. So anyway, that's, sorry, I'm feeling very mercenary tonight. Cut them out. Who cares about them?
Huh. That's intriguing, because we're all in such disparate corners of our respective fandoms and fan work. And speaking of which, and we touched on this a little bit, but we could all go into depth a bit more, is how do you think fandoms differ between their source material, like TV, film, games, and, you know, and even books, because there are books that do have fandoms spring up around them.
How do you think, was the question how they are different from the source, like how the fandoms are different from the source material?
How do the fandoms, like, form separately? Like, you know, how are book fandoms different than TV fandoms?
Yes.
Like,
do you think so?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I can say this because I've been studying sort of a spread of things, and it's interesting because like book fandoms tend to be visual in a different way, right? Because what you have is fan art, generally speaking, right? So like if it's a book fandom that has not been made into a TV show or a movie, you've got a lot of like very creative interpretation of what it is. And sometimes people like build out headcanons of like what a certain character looks like or whatever, but you're never going to have like, they're not going to be big on Tumblr in the same way, right? Because you can't like have visual culture that's shared. To me, when I realized that, I was like, oh, of course, that makes so much sense, right? And since then I've looked through and I've been like, yeah, no, there's a bunch of books that have a lot of people who really love them, but they're rarely as big Tumblr fandoms, you know, in the same way, or as big visual fandoms.
Right. Well, I mean, it depends on how you're defining fandom at this point too. True.
I mean, yeah, kind of in the book world also, like, I know a lot of people who are, like, book fans.
Right.
But they're, like, fans of books, you know, and they really love certain books. But it's not the kind of thing where they're going to sit there and write meta about it for a year, you know?
Right, write it. Yeah, and I was specifically referring to, like, the few books that have enough of a fandom where there is meta and there's all of that, sure, right? Sure. Like, you know, right, but also, like...
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well, the other thing I was going to say is that by comparison with games fandom, I feel like in my experience, games fandoms, because there's a lot more access to all of the creators and there's a lot more sort of interaction in certain ways, like... And maybe it's just because of the structure of the game industry, it feels like there's a very different level of, maybe expectation is the wrong word, level of interaction. Oh, God. Elizabeth, you just made a lot of noise.
What?
Your recording just had a lot of noise on it for some reason.
I'm sorry.
I'll start over. In games fandoms, I feel like maybe because of the different structure of the games industry, there's different expectations or different things that people are concerned about or, you know, happy about, irritated with, whatever. And there's different expectations of how they're going to get those things solved, right? Because you have patches to games, you have DLC, all of that. And those are different concerns. And you also have different ways that people interact with the developers versus like the voice actors versus the writers versus everything else. So I think that in games fandoms, it's often more about like the way that people interact with the creators that differentiates it, in my opinion.
That is a good opinion, because a lot of people don't think about it. Things that just go, bah, fandom, and they don't think about the different aspects of it. So to kind of end this segment and get into questions that were sent in on Twitter, and Flourish will probably laugh at this, I wanted to end on a BioWare-related question. And Elizabeth, since you're not a gamer, feel free to fill in a book or something or TV show that you are interested in. But I was wondering, are you excited for Andromeda? And if so, do you have any kind of plans for it since it is so close to release now?
Oh, man. I am excited for Andromeda. I'm a little worried about Andromeda because I've seen some negative things about it, but I'm trying not to prejudge. I have been slowly parceling out. So I get really into one game and I like play it to death. And then the next hotness comes out and I get really into that. So I'd been trying to like parcel out the downloadable content for The Witcher for like a really long time. And I have too much of it left. So actually, I think I'm probably going to have to finish that before I start Andromeda, even though Andromeda is about to come out, which will also give me some time to modify my expectations and like determine what Andromeda is likely to actually be like. So, yeah. You know, I mean, we'll see. But I am excited. Mass Effect was the originals were a very big game in my life, so I'm hopeful, tentatively hopeful.
Okay. What about you, Elizabeth? Any books, movies, TV that you're excited for?
Oh, God. I don't know. I can't think of anything. I'm enjoying the book I'm reading right now. Yeah, I haven't started it yet. I don't want to oversell it. We both have copies. Wait, have you read it yet, Flourish?
Not only have I read it, I lent it to someone who really wanted to read it. Wow, she's gonna incredible. Buy a copy too.
This is a,
it was really
this
good
book by Zan Romanoff. It's a YA novel called Grace and the Fever. It's about, well, I haven't actually started it, so you could say what it's about.
It is about a girl who is really into a boy band, and she ends up sort of getting drawn into their like real life orbit and learning about what they are actually like as opposed to what she had imagined they would be like. And it was a delight. I stayed up all night reading it. So I am excited for you if you're not excited.
Yeah. I mean, like, I haven't. Yeah, I'm excited to. This is the most lukewarm I'm excited ever, but I am excited to read it. I've been having a lot of trouble reading books since the election, stupidly, which is bad because it's part of my job. So I feel a little lukewarm in general. You know, it's weird. All right, this is, like, not fandomy at all, but, like, I actually genuinely excited because I just found out there's a new Alan Hollinghurst novel coming out in the fall. He's a British literary novelist. So, but literally sent my friend who also loves him, like, a, you know, an all caps text being like, New Hollinghurst. So, which is like, there aren't very many writers that feel this way.
You're so fancy. Your tastes are so elevated.
Yeah. I mean, I like Hollinghurst. If you knew Hollinghurst, you might not say that, but
I'm like Star Trek novels and then like weird, you know, avant-garde shit that almost does not count as a novel. And you're like,
yeah, you're like fancy. The lowest and then like the most obnoxiously high. And I'm like,
does that make
middle,
middle
brow? Upper middle brow.
Sorry, I had to say it. I could not say it.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, this is also one of my friends who loves Frasier. So just to give you the full context.
No worries. So before we get into those Twitter questions, I was wondering, is there anything coming up for each of you that's like kind of fun or anything coming up for the show? Any new and exciting guests you want to talk about?
When will this come out?
This will be out next week.
Yeah, well, so I am currently working on a piece for our Medium that's ostensibly about Mary Sue's, which if any of your listeners aren't in fan fiction, does everyone know what a Mary Sue is? Maybe I don't need to explain it.
Just explain it because you never know.
Okay. I mean, that term is actually kind of spread out of fan fiction fandom, though that's where it comes from. Flourish, you know the history behind it? I think it was like coined back in the 70s.
It was from a Star Trek it was actually like a Star Trek parody fanfic, I think, where someone wrote a story where a parody term, I guess. Someone wrote a story where, you know, there's Mary Sue, the new ensign, who's going to show up and she's so special. She's going to save the Enterprise and she's going to sleep with either Kirk or Spock or maybe both, or maybe they'll fight over her and then she'll probably die, or she'll get them together if it's that kind of story. And then she'll die heroically and everybody will mourn her. And
oh, I didn't know that death was a part of the Mary Sue construction.
Yeah, one possibility is that she dies tragically, right? And
so basically, it's like an original character that's usually a stand-in for the author. And the like hatred of this is so sexist, right? Because you have it's often pretty young female writers writing an awesome version of themselves hanging out on the Enterprise or wherever, or at Hogwarts. And people are like, you are the worst. You are so dumb. Right? And it's like, the knee-jerk hatred of this, I just think is one of the biggest flags of fan fiction fandoms, like longstanding misogyny. I mean, a bad original character is a bad original character, but just the kind of, you know, Anyway, so that's the starting point of this piece, but it's talking about, go ahead.
I was just, do you know the joke? What do you call a male Mary Sue?
A protagonist.
Boom!
That's part of it, right? So now you have people in like common like pop culture conversations being like, Rey from Star Wars is a Mary Sue because she seems so competent and she's the hero. And it's like, well, fuck you, really? You know? So that's the starting point, but I'm actually talking about perspective in fan fiction. So I'm also talking about Imagines, which are huge on Wattpad, where it's the point of view is a second person you often, and you are, you know, going on a date with Harry Styles. And talking about the connection between, this is going to make it sound fancy and literary. I don't want to oversell it. But the connection between you, the writer, and the characters in fan fiction. So that's what I'm working on right now, and I'm excited about it. And we're going to talk about it in our next episode.
Yeah, the other thing which will be, I think, out for people by the time this airs is we're running another survey, which is pretty exciting. That's like my current, it's both of our projects, but it's my baby, I think.
I haven't even taken the test version of it yet, so I'm not going to take any – I'm not going to claim this in any way.
So it's basically a survey where we're looking at sort of people's definition of fanfic. And it's also sort of a test survey for future work that we want to talk, like we want to think about how people define the term fandom and so forth, because these are really sticky terms that people disagree on, like what they mean. But so by the time this episode airs, it will probably be available to the public. So you should go over to Fansplaining's website and take it. You don't have to read fanfic or even consider yourself a fan in order to take part. In fact, we would love it if more people who don't read fanfic or consider mm-hmm. themselves fans took part, because we're not trying to find out just like what fanfiction authors think, right? We're trying to look at a broader range. So,
definitely.
Very cool. So we actually got some questions. And it's from our two usual suspects, Garrick Winter and Tim Poedante. So Garrick sent in a couple questions. And to start off, he wanted to know, in your experience, do different kinds of media, books / TV games, tend to lead to different kinds of fandoms and fan experience, which we touched on a little bit, but we did not get in depth?
So, yeah, we touched on it and Flourish said you thought no. But in my experience, I haven't seen a huge difference. I mean, I'm not sure that my experience necessarily is illustrative. Maybe what's the word I'm looking for? Like it may not be ordinary in the sense that Harry Potter, as far as book fandoms go, it was so big and so all encompassing, you know, that like I'm not sure you could say it's not an ordinary book fandom. I don't know if you would agree, Flourish.
Well, and it had it had movies, right? So I guess when I'm talking about book fandoms, I'm usually meaning things that don't have a movie.
Right.
Yet.
So, but like I started reading Harry Potter fan fiction because I got sucked into Harry Potter. But the next two fandoms that I was in, which were Torchwood, the Doctor Who spinoff, and Sherlock, I came to via other, you know, kind of this migratory fan thing that happens where when Harry Potter ended, all my favorite fan fiction writers started writing Torchwood stories. And I was like, what's that? You know? And like, I just wanted to stay with them because they were great writers. And I think a lot of people do that. They follow fan fiction writers around. So I do think that, because at least in that kind of fandom, you know, patterns definitely replicate themselves. People just kind of move on to the next thing. And in a way, you know, can problematically replicate themselves. You keep repeating your bad habits too. So, yeah.
Neat.
And good answer.
Okay. Did I speak for you as well?
Sure.
Okay, great.
Garrick's other question was, have you had any especially memorable encounters or interactions with the creators of works you're fans of?
Oh my God.
Go ahead, Flourish.
I got really into Sleepy Hollow for the first season. And then, like, partially as a result of that and also because of hanging out in... I've said this a million times, by the way, but it was truly memorable. I got to know Orlando Jones because of like him being a person who's really interested in fan fiction and fandom in Hollywood. And so, you know, we got sort of connected through work things and that was all fine, except then we were at Comic-Con and like he like pulled me into the green room and there were all of the stars and we were hanging out and it was weird. And Tom Meissen, it turns out, is really short. I mean, he's not really short, but I'm really tall. And then like Comic-Con was over and I had like gotten drunk with people and like wandered around with them and it was great and everything. And then I was like, oh shit, I can't write any more fan fiction for my fandom anymore. It's over. Because, you know, I mean, we're not like texting each other or anything. Like I don't know, like we're not friends, like, but I just was like, now you're people to me.
So, wait, were you writing RPF?
I was not writing RPF, but I couldn't even write it about like their characters. You know, I couldn't even get that far. I was like, oh, but I've actually seen you. And now like, I can't describe your genitals. That's so weird. And that's never happened to me before. I don't know. It was just a thing.
That's such a like Hollywood-y like name dropping encounter.
I don't know what to say. That's how all of my encounters work. So, like...
Okay, are we talking about random things? Or, like, okay, so every time I've met a famous author, or relatively famous to me, author that I love and admire, it's gone incredibly poorly, except for the most recent time, which I told Flourish about, where I made him laugh, one of my favorite authors. And so I felt like it erased every bad experience I've ever had. Because it's like, they're always so tired when they're doing signings and then you try to like say something nice and they're like, okay. You're like, I guess you don't care about me, which is that it's that moment of realization that it's a one-way relationship, especially with a writer, when you can feel so intimately connected with their words and really feel like you were in conversation with a book. And that just reminds you that you were not actually talking back and forth with the author.
Right.
But then also while I was in the Sherlock fandom, I was writing an article about Sherlock in my favorite coffee shop while I was living in London. And my friend was like, I think Mark Gatiss is behind you. And he was sitting like, did I tell you this, Farish?
No,
he was sitting like 5 feet behind me. Yeah. And she was like, Joelle, take a picture. And he's literally, yeah. And so I put that at the end of the article. I was like, as I was typing this, I just realized Mark Gatiss was in my coffee shop. So yeah. And then people read the article and they like tweeted at him and they were like, how do you take your coffee? And I was like, leave him out of this, even though I did start by mentioning him in the article. So yeah. I mean, this was on purpose, but he hosted like a midnight film screening of a Fellini movie at a random cinema in North London. And so I went. And so I was just like standing next to him while we waited for the toilet at like 2 a.m. and he was wearing sandals. So I really felt like we were close at that point, you know, just going about our lives.
Okay. Intriguing. So aside from Garrick's questions, we got a couple from Tim, our usual suspect, who has also been a huge help with editing on the fly and things like that. So hi, Tim. And your question was, the first of which was, where have you found the most welcoming fandoms?
Well, I don't know. I mean, so if you listen to Fansplaining, you'll know this, that for most of the time that I've been in fandom, I have been a lurker. And I'm like, you know, proud of that and like to talk about like lurking as an act and the like idea of being in fandom and also like within and without simultaneously in fandom. And I think it's an interesting element of it that you could be in a community, but also like kind of silent, but also feel like you are somewhat involved in the participatory elements. And so I haven't felt really unwelcome, except for in discourse where people are like, people who lurk are garbage, which is definitely a point of discourse that I think Flourish used to subscribe to, but has since come around.
I did not subscribe. That is an extreme version of what. That's like the most. I think that I said something like, you should kudos fic you like. And you have turned that into people who lurk are garbage. No.
Flourish, I always kudos. What are you talking about?
Okay, well then, that's a pass. You're fine.
No, I mean, like, it's interesting, too, because it's just like it's a very in fanfiction spaces on Tumblr, there's a lot of discourse about, like, how people who don't participate are trash. And if people don't start leaving comments, then, like, there's going to be no more fanfiction. And while I think that people should people are writing stories for free. It's really great if people show them love. But I also think that that's not how being a fan of something works. I didn't need kudos to write my Sweet Valley High silicon chip manufacturer fan fiction. You know, I just loved it so much and I love my idea so much. So I know some people are disheartened when they don't get feedback, but for me, that's not a part of it. So it's hard for me to relate to that. So I find it welcoming to just kind of lurk in the background.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I think that longer running fandoms can sometimes be really toxic at a certain stage, but they also can be really welcoming. So I guess, like, for instance, as I've been getting into Star Trek, it's been funny because I've gotten, like, of course, there are some people who are jerks, but there's a lot of people who are like, holy shit, you're just into Star Trek right now. Oh, my God, you have so much joy. I can't wait for you to get to see, you know, so, like, that's really nice. And I feel like sometimes, like, Supernatural can be like that, I guess. I mean, I have watched it since the beginning, so that's hard to say from a personal note, but I've encountered a lot of people who are, like, new to the fandom or who came in midway through. And obviously there's a lot of bad stuff that happens in any fandom, but I think there's also a lot of good stuff and a lot of people who are really welcoming and open there. So
I see, but like mostly what I see as Supernatural is Wank. Maybe that's just people I'm following who are still actively involved in Wank. Yeah. And I mean, it's massive. So obviously there's a lot of corners. I would say, actually, I think that, so I just rejoined the Harry Potter fandom last year. And like all the new bad stuff she's doing aside, it's actually been a very interesting space. And I would maybe say that, fandoms with closed canons can, I think can often be more welcoming. No one in Harry Potter is sitting here arguing about which ship is going to become canon, because that's over and done, right? And so I see way more multi-shipping. I see it's like, oh, what about blank and blank? Sure, what about blank and blank, you know? And I think that because ship wars can be, I think, are the most toxic part of this kind of fandom, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's just really, really nice to not be in a space where that's happening, I would say. And it gives people more space to be experimental and more interpretations. And you see more people rewriting the canon in interesting and different ways. You see more gender bending, more queering the text in a broader diversity and more race bending, which, you know, I'm not seeing in shows that are actively on the air where people are fighting yeah. for the creator's validation and for the creator to validate what they are thinking.
I take that point really well, Elizabeth. I think I was mostly thinking about like physical meetups and like conventions and hanging out together, where I feel like that's where Supernatural, I think, really shines, actually. And that's not all the same thing as what you were talking about there.
Sure, sure. And I get that vibe from people who are in Supernatural. And that's kind of, it's kind of unique within the space, what Supernatural does. It's like constant conventions, you know? So
yeah. And I mean, that was sort of the comparison to Trek partially too, I guess, because Trek particularly.
So the other two questions he had were, what was the most memorable fic that you read?
Oh, I have a couple.
Okay.
So, my favorite fandom is definitely Harry Potter. And obviously I've read way, way more in that than in anything else. I kind of think that the best fic per capita that I've encountered was in Torchwood, which, for anyone who hasn't seen it, was a spinoff of Doctor Who that was quote unquote adult. Basically, it was a very uneven show, but that left a lot of space for fan creators, and it attracted some really extraordinary writers. And so my two favorite fics, one is this big, complicated, but kind of overall very happy story about a poly, like three of the main characters in a poly relationship. And it just, oh, Flourish, do you ever read it? I've recommended it like 100 times.
I've still never read it. I'm sorry. Read it.
It's so good. Come on. You love polyfic.
I do love polyfic. I really love polyfic.
Oh, and there's, oh, just thinking about it. It's called And We Held Goldust in Our Hands, but the author is Amanda R. And I know she said she wrote it after her husband killed himself. And it's just very emotionally raw, but this, like, it's all working towards this joyful point. And it's, I don't know, it feels very cathartic when you read it. The other one I loved in Torchwood is a long series, and it has two long stories. It's called Intersecting Geodesics, I think is how you pronounce it, by Nancy Brown, who's just a really, really great long form writer. And I mean, I have to wonder, if you haven't seen the show, if it's going to have as much impact, because it is a fix-it. It fixes a major character death. But the world building is complex and fantastic. It's set on a faraway planet in the 51st century, some things are much better than Earth and some things are a lot worse. And it just feels, it's like a really richly drawn, you know, and it just fills in the canon backstory in a way that, oh, it's just such an engaging story, and I love it so much. I would read it 100 times also. So, okay, so those are my two faves.
Yeah, I have way too many, but I'll restrict myself to two also. I'll restrict myself to two that aren't the ones that I usually go to. So one of them is an X-Files fanfic. It's called Machines of Freedom by Amal Nahurie. And Machines of Freedom is interesting because it takes the X-Files and it takes everything up through the second movie as canonical, which is super rare in X-Files fic, because the second movie was not anybody's finest hour, to put it mildly. But this fic like takes all of it and makes and accepts it, and it's 100% canonical, and it's really great. And it also covers colonization, which is sort of, if people don't watch the X-Files, right, Mulder and Scully are sort of uncovering these government conspiracies to do with aliens. And at the end of the show, at the end of the first sort of run of the show before the revival, finally, like, it was like there's a date set for the alien colonization of Earth. Like, the aliens have been sort of working with the government, and now they're going to come. And that has never been actually done in the show. Like, they've sort of completely sidestepped it and pretended that they didn't make that promise. And I understand why from a Hollywood standpoint, but it's super, super, super disappointing to me, because it you know, it seems like that's where the story has to go, right? Like, now it's a new kind of story. It's a story about an alien invasion of Earth. That's where it should be. So anyway, this story, Machines of Freedom, is really incredible, a great colonization of Earth story, invasion of Earth, I should say. I mean, they're sort of the same thing when it comes down to it, in any context, whether it is Earth or North America or South America or wherever. So anyway, there's that. And then there's the other fic is something that is hard to read because it is still not actually digitized. It is an original Star Trek fan fiction, but it's very famous. It's called The Wait by Leslie Fish. And if you can get your hands on a zine copy, I highly recommend it. Or maybe soon there's a project to digitize it. Maybe it will actually succeed and then people will be able to read it online. It is far from a perfect story. It was written in the 80s, but it's really interesting because while it's not Jen, like, there are relationships in it, it is mostly about, like, the author is an anarchist, and it's mostly about how Star Trek is, like, kind of very socialist and, from the author's perspective, problematic. And there's, like, an alternate universe kind of world that Captain Kirk is in, and he sort of looks like basically goes to this alternate society which is anarchist. And while I don't at all agree with the politics of it, it's incredibly ambitious and really you know, like, it's really an argument about politics made through a fic, and I really enjoy that. And I think it also says interesting things about, like, you know, the characters and so forth, in addition to making a political argument. And I don't read a lot of fic like that these days. So, yeah.
Huh. Interesting. You'll have to drop a couple links in the show notes for all the stuff that you all referenced, if you can find them.
For sure.
Very alien-oriented recs that we just gave.
Normally I pull things like from, you know, Harry Potter or Merlin or whatever.
Yeah, so. Yeah, we're giving Harry Potter stories. In one of the ones I just wrecked, the main character has sex with a sentient tree creature.
So this reminds me of the thing in the tropes section where we had, like,
we didn't have tree creatures.
We had like a question of, like, were people cool with, like, bestiality in stories? And a lot of people apparently, like,
Flourish. We asked if they liked interspecies. We didn't say, do you like bestiality?
Okay, so people read interspecies and they thought we meant bestiality. And what we meant was, like, you know, an
sentient alien tree creature. Also sentient,
like a tree creature or Vulcan.
Worf? Is he, like, do people ship him? Spock?
Worf is shipped. Worf, in fact, on the show has a kid with someone who's half Klingon and half human, and then he later gets married to a Trill, and the Trill are a species that there's, like, two sentient beings that are merged with each other, like a parasite and a host, except that they, like, both consent to do it. And so that's, like, a whole new universe of weird.
That's an interspecies relationship.
That is like three different species in one relationship. It's basically a poly-interspecies relationship.
So, no, we are not asking about whether you like bestiality, which there's fic out there for it, I'm sure. We're not going to get into that. just not.
That's probably wise. So, Tim's last question, and this could spiral off quickly. So, let's keep this hopefully to like one or two responses. Sure. Because the question is there any fan community that killed something you might have loved otherwise?
Hmm. Well, I mean, I don't want to go too much into it, but my experiences in the Sherlock fandom basically just sucked my interest in Sherlock away. So, and I was there for a while and I tried. So, I don't need to like get into any details, I feel like. And that's something I was actually in the fandom of. I mean, like we were saying, like, I don't know, you see Ship Wars or you see Wank from a distance or you hear about people's experiences and you're like, I don't want anything to do with that fandom. And then it's like a lot of the time, I think fandoms spring up around cultural products that aren't that great. So it's like, well, you know, if you're saying the show's not that great and the joy is within the fan community, but all I see is anger and sadness and, you know, infighting, then like, there's nothing here for me. Yeah. So yeah, that's a negative response.
Well, I mean, I guess mine's even more negative. You want to hear mine?
Yeah, top me.
Okay, I can top you, which is that I think that, so a big reason why I do not generally interact in the games community outside of, like, interactive fiction, which is obviously a small, sometimes wanky, but generally friendly community that has a lot of, you know, if you include Twine especially, like, has a lot of women and queer people in it, is I just don't need, like, I don't need the kind of sexism and drama that happens in the wider video game culture. Like, you know, there was a time in my life when I played World of Warcraft every day for a large, you know, for several hours a day. And like, this was before we were on voice as a standard thing. You know, like you could sort of be a very serious World of Warcraft player, not like in a progressive raiding guild, but in, you know, a serious, you know, guild that was like good. And you could do that without voice. And when I was never going to raid because I didn't want to be like a woman and have that be a thing. You know what I mean? Like I was never going to really, really do that. And similarly, like I just have sort of avoided a lot of the more masculine communities in video game fandom because I just don't have time for it. You know, like I could imagine myself really getting into it. I could see myself like, not just writing fanfic, but being really, really involved in some of this stuff. But I think that that's one of the reasons why I haven't. There's enough drama in the communities that I'm already in, and I don't need to go someplace where I'll also have those other hurdles to jump. I think what I'm trying to say is, like, so many props to any woman who deals with that, because I am weak and am avoiding it forever.
Hey, don't blame the victim.
Very much so.
Wait, well, what victim was I blaming?
No, you're the victim.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I accept that. I'm not really a victim, though, because I've avoided it so hard I've never been a victim of it.
Yeah, I mean,
don't start now, like, okay, please, no one start now.
I just feel like if I can't imagine being in a fandom that's not the kind of fandom that I've always been in. And I wonder how often people cross over, you know? So it's like, oh, like, here I am writing Harry Potter fan fiction, and now I'm going to go to this space where it's, you know, like a completely different conversation, completely different fanish engagement, or vice versa. So I don't know. Maybe it happens. I'd be curious to know. Maybe that's the question for our listeners.
Maybe. So sadly, it is time to wind down. And the way that we often do this is talk about what we've been playing or reading or watching recently. And as the guests, you all get to go first.
Mm. Well, obviously I've been watching Frasier. So have I been watching anything that's new? I'm trying to think. No, probably not. Well, I guess we did watch Yuri on Ice. That was like 2 months ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
That was probably the most recent new thing that I watched. I'm reading a book called The Hate You Give. That's You, the letter U, by Angie Thomas. It's a debut novel, and it's been dubbed as the like Black Lives Matter YA novel, which is probably a little reductive. but it's about a shooting of an unarmed black man, and the protagonist is a young black woman who comes from a rougher neighborhood but goes to a fancy, mostly white private school and feels caught between two worlds. I'm only partway into it, but it's fantastic. And I mean, it's getting a ton of praise, so I'm sure lots of people have heard about it already, but I think it's definitely worth picking up. So yeah, I'm enjoying that. And it's YA, so it's definitely accessible prose, I would say. So that's what I'm reading right now. Sorry, I don't mean to diminish YA, but like, it's often more accessible. And then I'm reading the boy band YA novel next, so it's just going to be easy sailing for me. Except for comic
well, I mean, I'm there. as I've mentioned, I'm making heavy weather of the Star Trek novels. It's not that heavy weather. I really love them.
Making heavy weather flourish. Please continue. I've never heard that expression out of your mouth.
Star Trek novels, and some of them are really good, and some of them are really bad. And I'm also watching Deep Space Nine for the first time, because when it aired, I thought that it was just like the amazing flowing shopping mall. So we're learning some things about Sisko, who is not Captain Sisko, but I always want to call him that anyway. He's a commander, for what it's worth. And then I'm watching Riverdale. Which I'm enjoying, and I'm especially enjoying because, like in our last podcast, we had a writer from Riverdale on, as I think we've mentioned. So it's kind of interesting to sort of watch and have a little bit of inside scoop about. So, yeah. And I'm playing with The Witcher, and will be playing Mass Effect Andromeda when I get done with all The Witcher DLC, which I'm saving.
Yeah, I'm playing Candy Crush Soda. So
you play Candy Crush a lot. You should own that.
Well, it's not something that's like particularly like. It is true that I often win Bubblegum Hill, and then I'm like the king of the hill. There's an element of it.
It's a legitimate game.
I mean, it's fine. It's like it's nice to. I like to play it. Right when I wake up and I'm listening to like the news, and I'm like, I'm just going to chill out here for 10 minutes and play it. But I'm not like, I don't know. I wouldn't like sit on my couch and play it just for the hell of it. It's like a very good background game. But yeah, that's the extent of my games.
Okay.
That's it. Am I the
what
least
you?
Person you've ever had on this show?
What am I what?
What? It's your turn.
Oh, what am I doing? I am still playing Final Fantasy XV, although I'm getting more and more frustrated with it as I get further into the story, because it's little finicky, nitpicky things that I have to do to complete missions, and I'm getting really annoyed. And I got to play Mass Effect Andromeda multiplayer at PAX East. It is incredibly fast. It is way different because there's jumping now.
What?
And, but
you can jump?
You can jump. There's jump packs.
Ah!
Oh, my God.
So by the time you all hear this, I will be deeply, deeply into Mass Effect. So that'll probably be a lot of what happens on the next show. And I've been trying to finish Herald by Game Wisp, because it's a short visual novel. It's just, it's actually really hard to do things on a flight, even if you have enough room. So, Herald by Wisp Fire is the other thing I've been playing since they released it. And that's kind of it. That's it for me. That's what I'm doing other than traveling nonstop until May. So, yeah, so it's going to be an interesting balance of trying to get stuff done, do the podcast, or take a little bit of a break while I jaunt everywhere. So this has been awesome. You both are amazing guests, and I'm really, really glad we had a chance to talk.
You didn't think we were too negative?
No. Have you? You follow me on Twitter.
It's true. You're a good follow. Highly recommended. Like, literally everyone listening to this follows you already, but
I don't know. I mean, just this morning I was going on a bit of a tear about diversity fails and the things that companies do badly.
If it was a tear about the hair in Mass Effect Andromeda, you did show me a video of the hair, and I did literally yelp when we got to some of the hairstyles because even I could tell how terrible they were. So,
yesterday was my ranting about that. Today was my ranting about diversity and how companies always have the one mildly marginalized white person out there as the face of their diversity initiatives and don't, you know, walk the walk in addition to all the talk that they do. And I was cranky, put it that way.
You saw Zuckerberg's statement about Facebook support,
that's what kicked it off.
Aha! Flourish, you saw this, right? For context, he said that they had one of their point of diversity on their all white board was diversity of opinion. So, fine.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Wait. Yeah, that kind of kicked off a rant, and I pointed out as well as I could without naming names and panels I saw at the Game Developers Conference. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fine. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was a thing that made me cranky at 6 in the morning, which is how I got where I'm at now. So, hey, let's see what happens.
Well, see, if you go on your rants at 6 in the morning, I'm never going to see them. Literally.
Oh, you'll see them.
I'll get them in case you missed it section.
No, I usually just kind of put them together in Medium or Storify later.
Okay. All right, good. That when I'm awake several hours later, I'll check them out.
Yeah. I mean, it depends. Sometimes I actually get enough sleep on those rare occasions. but aside from me being a bit ranty online, where can people find you and Fansplaining?
So Fansplaining is fansplaining.com, which is a Tumblr. So, you know, if you're on Tumblr, we reblog a lot of like pan fandom fanish content, and that's got all our episodes. We have show notes and transcripts that Flourish does. So they are accessible if you, are not a listener, though you're listening to this podcast. So you're probably a listener. And then we are at Fansplaining, twitter.com/fansplaining, fansplaining@gmail.com, and our Patreon, Fansplaining on Medium, that's medium.com/fansplaining is the collection. And then on Patreon, it's /fansplaining. And, I don't know, I was going to talk about Patreon, but then I realized we're not on our own podcast, so.
So I have a link to the Patreon, talk about your Patreon.
Well, I'm just going to say we have great patrons and we have, you know, like very, you know, we have tiny zines. And if you donate lots of money to us, Flourish will knit you a Harry Potter sweater. And I'm wearing mine right now and I feel really festive. So no, Flourish, I think my cat's allergic to it.
No.
Yesterday in the snow day, I wore it all day. I had a fire going. I was like, this is the life. And then Orlando was sitting at the end of the couch and I grabbed her. I was like, come here, furry. And then she sneezed. And I was like, all right, that's weird. And then like 2 hours later, I tried it again. She sneezed again. What else could it be? You think she's allergic to me? It's possible.
I mean, it's just like a wool sweater, so.
It's a lot of wool. Maybe she's having trouble.
I mean, maybe she's allergic to wool. You should try her with other wool things.
All right. Maybe I'll get her a sweater and see what happens.
God, oh, my God. She would. Do you think that cat would stand for a sweater? I want to watch this. You have to put it on YouTube.
When she got her, when she was fixed, she got her, girl cats get fixed? Whatever. You know what I mean. She had a cone on and she reached her neck so far that she tore her stitches out in her abdomen with her teeth.
Oh, no.
So I don't think that she would do very well in an outfit.
No.
Yeah, that'd be a really short-lived attempt.
Done. She'd tear it apart with her teeth. So anyway, that's Fansplaining on the internet. And I am Elizabeth Minkle everywhere on Tumblr and Twitter. Everywhere. That's the only two places. But I am on both of those things a lot. So, yeah.
Yeah. I am also Flourish everywhere. Except I'm not Flourish on Instagram, and if the person who has the Flourish Instagram and doesn't use it is listening to this, I will pay them more money than that Instagram is worth to have the name. So please, God, give it to me.
Flourish, you know someone has Instagram/Elizabeth Minkle, right?
I do know that.
It's a bot, and I reported it to Instagram, and they were like, This is not our problem. So Instagram, if you're listening, it is your problem.
You better.
Take that account down.
Yeah.
All right.
That's us.
Yeah, there we are. Mad at Instagram.
That's okay. But mad at Instagram. I'm mad at video games.
Perfect. Don't worry. We're all mad. It's good. It's good. Orlando, mad at things on her body that she doesn't have control over.
There you go. And I'm Cypher of Tear pretty much everywhere. If you find another Cypher of Tear, I'm sorry. Someone has decided to impersonate me. Sucker. Why impersonate me? But this has been amazing. Thank you. Thank you so very much for being patient and coming back on when I'm actually sitting at home for a change.
Oh, thank you so much for having us. It was wonderful to get to talk to you again.
Yeah, it has been really, really fabulous. I also am now like much more excited about Mass Effect Andromeda than I was before. I was like on the downswing, and you've made me be on the upswing. So despite
I had no idea you were so into games. You keep this from me.
We just start talking about it because you don't play games.
I know, but like you could express some enthusiasm. It hasn't stopped me from talking about Frasier, even though you're not a Frasier watcher.
Well, that's true. Anyway, thank you for bringing out these sides of us.
That's right.
That's awesome. And then Flourish and I, we can compare some Andromeda notes after it comes out.
Sounds like a plan.
Yes. And for those listening, next week we are going to talk to the one and only Zoe Quinn. We're going to talk about her upcoming book and the game that they're making with Chuck Tingle. So if you're listening to this and you somehow have not gotten in questions, you must send them in by email so they can be screened. And that is freshoutoftokens@gmail.com. And then after that, may take a little bit of hiatus because I have a full month of travel ahead of me. And anyone who's ever tried to do anything while they're traveling knows that that's usually not possible. So join me for episode 89 next week. And then after that, we'll figure it out. We will either be back in a week or take a little bit of a break and come back in early May. So talk to you in a week. And thanks again to my wonderful guests. Bye.
Bye. Thank you. Bye.